Hello, this is Richard Miles with BoardGameAuthority.com.
So my guest today is Patrick Scott, and Patrick agreed to be on the show today not to promote an active Kickstarter project like most of my other guests, but to provide some lessons learned and some helpful tips about the Kickstarter process. Patrick, welcome, and thank you for taking the time to speak with me today.
Hey, Richard, how's it going?
It's going great. How about yourself?
I'm doing very well. Really excited to be here.
Let me briefly get people up to speed. Patrick launched your Kickstarter campaign on February 26th, and that was for a game called King's Favor, and it ran for 31 days, but ultimately it did not reach its funding goal. And so I'll open things up there and let you just kind of tell us about the campaign, what happened, maybe some of your strategies going involved with it, and then we'll get into some questions.
Okay. Again, the campaign ended up running, 31 days? And we got 11% of funding. So we got $4,400 out of a $40,000 goal. And, you know, there's a lot of things that could have been done differently. And there are a lot of things that I think were done very well. I'm very happy with how the campaign went. I think there's a lot to say on, you know, I think there's a lot that someone else could learn from what I did.
Let's start with the positives. What do you think, since you said you think there's some things that you did well, let's start with that. What do you think went right for the campaign?
Well, I'm very happy with kind of the response that I got from other people who were already established in the community. I don't have a very good board game geek presence, and I got a couple people reaching out to me and helped me set up my page for the game and get all that kind of built up. There were some other people that were just like, hey, we really like what you're doing. And they were always sending me resources. And there was a lot of that kind of good energy coming out behind the scenes. As well, I was really happy with how some of my pledge rewards worked out, how some of my tiers worked out. At my $1 level, I was giving away the full art print and play as well as some other stuff. And, you know, I also had a black and white version of the print and play available for free. My goal was to give something just very, very immediately to people so that they had, you know, so that there was something of value that at any level, right?
Right.
I'm not going to go, hey, here's a digital high five for giving me a dollar. Like, no, you gave me a buck. You deserve something for that. So, and that was actually a very popular tier. So I'm really happy with how that came out. And I got a lot of people all over the world, people who may not have wanted to spring for international shipping or something like that, you know, and they're able to, really make a game out of it, you know. And if they want to print their own copy of the game, like I'm of the mind that that's great, you know. If they can get a better quality game than what I can give them, then or not, you know, whatever. They have the game. I mean, my point is to get the game out into the world, and that is something that this campaign really did do well. I hadn't done a lot of, we'll get into it later. I hadn't done a lot of marketing and, you know, early push, whatever the term is, you know, kind of just availability of the project ahead of time. I didn't talk it up much before I launched, but when I launched, that was kind of really the release to the public.
Right.
Not that I was holding it back. I was always fine having people look over things. I was just uncomfortable, you know, spamming them and harassing them to do it. And once it was out there, I had an excuse. It was like, hey, here it is, you know, take a look at it.
Right.
And it got some traction that way. And again, we'll get into why that really wasn't enough.
And so you mentioned that you had some professional, or at least semi-professional, maybe, depending on who it was, feedback and interaction from people on that level. Like, how did you connect with those individuals?
I do have a couple of Facebook groups that I am subscribed to that are all about board games and Kickstarter board games and stuff like that. And those groups are great for kind of just spitballing, and people will post questions, and there's kind of a, you know, rapport that gets built there. And that was great because it was kind of for the small things, and I've met a couple people through that. That's been very good. I also have an in-person local meetup that I go to every month that I just started going to a few months ago, just before the Kickstarter launched. And there are some serious people there who come from all walks of the board game. Some people are just starting their first game. Some people have already Kickstarted a couple and are publishing and doing whatever. And some people are just there because they like board games or whatever. And so they all consider themselves designers at some level. And
right.
that face-to-face interaction is really great. And I've gotten a lot out of that, just, you know, to really be able to just, it's a place where we can go and just talk shop, you know?
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. I'm a member of a few local board gaming groups myself, and those I have found are super valuable.
Absolutely.
The feedback that I get from friends and family, right? They're friends and family. So as much feedback as they give it's not the same as someone who has three successful Kickstarters under their belt, or a published game through traditional publishing means, or something like that. Like, they just look at the game in a completely different way than my friends and family do.
Right, right, yeah.
On the Facebook groups, because I'm a member of quite a few of board game design Facebook groups myself, I've seen a few times where people post their preview pages. Like, here's my Kickstarter preview page. Tell me what you guys think. Was that something you took advantage of?
Not really, not directly. I did post a pre-Kickstarter campaign, Thunderclap campaign, which was admittedly very poorly managed. That kind of had a way to get to the preview page. And right. I sent it out, kind of personally to other people that I know that do design, or just friends and family. And so I got a lot of feedback that way. But I wasn't too worried about how the page presented itself. So
let's tell the listeners who might not be completely in the know about what a Thunderclap is. So Thunderclap, it's kind of a unique little program where anybody who signs up under your Thunderclap campaign, the day that it launches, if it launches tomorrow at noon, then everybody who has signed up tomorrow at noon posts to whatever social media they signed up for. It may be Twitter, it may be Facebook, but all at the same time. So, your friend Jenny, your friend Bob, Uncle Dave, whomever signs up on the same day, it just blasts out their check out my friend's Kickstarter page or whatever the message is. So it's a big snowball effect of everybody just pumping out that content all at the same time. How did you find Thunderclap? You said it was poorly managed. I assuming that's on your part. What went wrong there?
I ran into Thunderclap because of some other entrepreneurial connections that I have. It's very big kind of in newer business models and stuff, kind of social media stuff. And board games are kind of catching up to all that as an industry. So it's kind of well known in those groups, but it's all among business people. It's all among marketers that know about Thunderclap. And you're pretty right about what Thunderclap does. The whole idea is to get enough people to make a threshold. And then from there, like, you just overwhelm social media and it actually expands out. Because, normally when you send out a Facebook post, Facebook only sends it to the people who you're closest to. It's anyone can see it, but the rest of the world really doesn't show up on their newsfeed, right? All of the rest of your friends. It's only a small subset. But when multiple of your friends are also sharing that link at the same time, it kind of gets this viral energy to it, and people who wouldn't normally be connected to, because multiple of their friends are sharing it, it reaches out to them and they see it too. So it's kind of this idea of really growing a larger audience. And I think it's a great idea. And a lot of companies, a lot of, charities and a lot of, organizations are really pushing it for really great things and really great causes. And I really want to see if that was something I could do for board games. Now, it didn't work out because going into it, I didn't do enough research. I was kind of on a whim. I'm like, I like this program. It's something that I think I should do just leading up to the Kickstarter. If I mess it up, maybe it'll detract from the actual launch, which it did. But it'd be really exciting to see if I could get it to work. So I set up a campaign for it. And the catch is that I didn't know this going into it, that you have to get a certain number, a minimum number of people to support you on the campaign. Right. Now, the minimum that you can select is 100, and I didn't know that going into it, and I didn't expect to have 100 supporters. I was just doing a very, a tight-knit group that I knew was going to support me. We got to 35 people saying that they'd throw their voice in, and that had a social reach of over 12,000 or something like that. So that was huge. Like, there was plenty of people that we could reach out to and make an impact with. But if you don't get to that that number, that 100, then it doesn't send out at all.
Right.
And so what that meant is, because I didn't plan on getting 100 in the first place, I didn't get any of that. And all those people that had said that they were going to support me then, when I launched a week later on Kickstarter, it was kind of a lot of my energy for King's Favor had already been burnt out, because I hadn't, I hadn't before the campaign, all of my building energy was done word of mouth. So they were all waiting for that first announcement on social media. Of when something was going down. And I hadn't been ramping that up on social media. So when I let out that first thing with Thunderclap and then followed it up a week later, a lot of those people didn't come back at all. Some people who, were great childhood friends, people who said, yeah, hey, I've already got, $250 saved away, tucked away, and I'm ready to give it to you. They never found the link again. And they lost interest because the Thunderclap didn't work, and they thought that it just wasn't worth putting in more time.
Right. So that sounds like kind of a cautionary tale of, number one, research the programs that you're going to use. If there is some kind of minimum threshold, make sure you can meet that beforehand, or it might just not work out.
Absolutely.
And number two, if you are going to use any third-party external tool that's not directly Kickstarter related, those people that were looking for that as your first entry point, if that entry point doesn't exist, you might have lost them. I mean, that's the bottom line, I think, for almost anything, right? I mean, not just a board game or a Kickstarter or whatever, but in marketing in general, like, you often only have one chance. If you blow that one chance, a certain portion of people, you lost them. They're not coming back. Let's discuss, if we can, your decision not to cancel the project once you realized it was not going to fund. I'm not sure if you listen to Richard Bliss's Funding the Dream podcast, but his recommendation is, if you know your Kickstarter is going to fail, cancel it instead of letting it ride all the way through. And the reason he says that is because a canceled project doesn't show up in Kickstarter's search results, whereas a campaign that just does not successfully fund does show up in their search results. So if you later, and let's say 6 months from now or a year from now, decide to launch King's Favor again, when anybody searches King's Favor, they're going to see the unsuccessful version and the new current version. A lot of advice is to cancel once you find out it's not going to fund. You decided to let it run the whole time. So can you talk about the decision there?
Sure. So yes, I think it's great advice, and I would recommend for most people to cancel early. I was in denial day one. I looked at the numbers and I'm like, all right, I kind of had a lackluster first day, but it's on track. We'll do fine. Day two, it really settled in. Like, yeah, we're not gonna make it. There's no way. We made about, two-thirds of what we needed to in the first 2 days to just be on level for the right path. And that's not even accounting for the fact that the first 2 days need to be your biggest and you need to build momentum then, so then you can just kind of roll off from it.
Right.
And I didn't have that. So I knew very early on that it was not going to be successful. Yet I still ended up going through with it because for me, this campaign was not ultimately about reaching funding. For most people, it's like it's all or nothing. You want that money, or you don't even really want to handle the project, or you want to come back and try it again. And for now, I don't intend to come back and relaunch this project. It's something that I'm, shelving. Maybe I come back to it sometime down the line. But for me, I just wanted to get the game out there. I wanted to kind of, as my first attempt at a board game, establish myself, even kind of, in the periphery of the community. And for that, even an unsuccessful campaign, I think is fairly significant. I ended up doing a fair amount of the updates that I had planned, not all of them, but a lot of the lore updates and and some kind of stuff to kind of build the world, build the game, and really show that I had developed, the product more or less to completion. And I ended up releasing a Game Crafter link at the end, so you could still get a print on demand copy of the game if you wanted to. I did release to all of the backers the full print and play midway through the campaign without even having funded, without, gave them the reward. Because for me, the point again was not, even if I made funding, I was not going to really make money off the game. I had a huge goal. It was $40,000, way too expensive, but that was just because I made a game that was not financially feasible. The game has too many components of different types that, and I'm not, I'm not Fantasy Flight. I don't have the resources to just pop out a game with all of, all these little pieces. So, and there's 32 dice in this game, and that just it's extra weight for shipping, and it's extra cost in components, especially if I wanted to do custom dice.
Yeah, that's what another thing I was going to bring up. So there's 32 dice and they're all custom, is that correct? Or only some of them are custom?
No, there are two types of dice in the game. They're white dice and blue dice, as they're called. And so there would be two molds. But again, like that, it all added up to something that was, at the end of the day, the $40,000, if I got that, it would allow me to print and ship to everyone. And then I'd have some copies left over. And that would be how I would make any money off this project. I was probably going to sink money in more money into just getting it all out there than I was really going to plan on making back. So, for me, the point was to get the game out,
Right.
and I think running the campaign all the way to the end really helped do that. So someone looks up my name. I mean, there are a lot of other Patrick Scotts in the world, so they're probably going to land on something else. But if they happen to land on my campaign, I want it to be representative of something that, you know, you might, you know, someone might see it as, you know, unsuccessfully funded, which it is, but I think it's also very successful as an endeavor, you know, to put out into the world. I made something creative and here it is. Thank you for looking.
Right. Yep.
I made the game for myself and for my friends and, you know, kind of on a whim and for, you know, for an overabundance of creative inspiration. And so it was just something that was, it was a passion project at the end of the day, which is something that is slowly kind of getting weeded out of the Kickstarter community, to be honest.
All right. So you mentioned that Kickstarter is kind of going away from these personal, like, labors of love type projects. And I kind of want to hit on that a little bit, because I think that's true as well. I think 3 years ago, Kickstarter might have been the perfect place for these type of, this is just something that I had inside me and I wanted to give to the world. Like, I wanted to have a platform where I could share this, and Kickstarter would be that platform. Now, however, they're growing, and not only in dollar amount wise, but just people that know what Kickstarter is. And then we have the companies that that the actual established companies that are running Kickstarter campaigns. And so combined all that, I think most people look at Kickstarter as a place to get, I don't want to say fully polished games, but they're not looking for pet projects anymore. So I think you hit on a very good point there, is that the ecology of Kickstarter has morphed a little bit over time to where it's not just, I have a homebrew system, and it may be a great homebrew system, it may be super polished or whatever, but it just doesn't have that backing and that support of a traditional publisher route, the distribution channels and all that. And the whole ecology of Kickstarter is kind of, it's changing to that almost a pre-sale type mentality now. It's like, I'm going to get this game a little bit before it hits the shelves that everybody else can get it. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. It's something that's kind of been lamented a lot in some of my groups that I'm associated with, especially that in-person one that I go to. The game designers are all like, hey, yeah, you know, we've all been, you know, members of Kickstarter for the last couple of years. We've watched, you know, a lot of that kind of change over time. We remember backing projects that were very homebrew and we were very excited for them. And sometimes they didn't end up how we wanted them. Sometimes they ended up even better than we expected, you know, but there is a push for now, mind you, there is also a very different ecology in each of the Kickstarter categories. You know, we're looking at board games. And that's got its own feel compared to, you know, you look at film or dance, which is its own very tight-knit, you know, community, or video games, which are all about, you know, concept funding rather than, you know, publishing costs, right?
Right.
And there's definitely a lot of change going on, at least, I mean, I would say all over Kickstarter, but definitely within the board game section, because we're seeing a lot of campaigns that are coming here with the money behind them to publish the game, just flat out. They
right.
could go, hey, like, we have the money, but we're going to spend that money on building a community, and then you guys, the community, is going to give us that money back to actually make the game. So it's an interesting twist on things. Kickstarter is no longer about generating traffic for your projects, which is something that I had an oversight about, and you have to have that early marketing. You have to. And then that's when it feeds it back to you.
Right. You have to have a community first. I think that's an important concept that a lot of people wanting to, especially for their first Kickstarters, they might miss that. And I was actually at a convention where a gentleman who had a successful Kickstarter was giving a presentation about how to have successful Kickstarters. And he mentioned, and I, when he mentioned this, I almost stood up and kind of pointed my finger at him, but I didn't. But he said, you know, Kickstarter is your marketing platform. In my opinion, that is false. And I think that's what you're hitting on here, is that it's not your marketing platform. Your marketing should happen before you launch your Kickstarter campaign. You need to get the people interested in whether it's a game or your film or whatever you're launching on Kickstarter before you launch, because Kickstarter is not going to do that for you.
Yes. I years ago, or 3 years ago, or maybe even as you know, recent as a year ago, you could have used Kickstarter as your marketing platform, but it's not that anymore. I think there's a lot of numbers going around. There's a lot of research to do for anyone looking at Kickstarter. But there's an oft-quoted number of 30% being kind of that threshold where it goes from kind of this little small tight community to the broad audience. But you have to reach that 30% just with your own community, just with your own support. Otherwise, you're not going to reach everyone else. Kickstarter's right. Not going to give you the time of day to get to the funding.
Right. If the signals are not there for Kickstarter to say this campaign could be worth something, right, they're not going to spotlight you. They're not going to highlight you in any of their on their front page or when you go to category pages or anything like that. And the reason for that, because it's not in Kickstarter's best interest. Kickstarter only gets paid when a campaign is successful. So if that 30% isn't there, you know, if that's the number, if that's the magic number for Kickstarter, for their algorithm to say, we're going to feature this product or this project, if that doesn't happen, it's not worth it to them, right? Like, they're not going to put their marketing efforts behind something that's not going to make them any money.
Absolutely. I mean, because if they throw people at a project and they're grinding this project up to 90% and then it ends at 90%, you know, that's what, you know, 90% of whatever their funding cost was of money that, you know, Kickstarter didn't get a cut of the pie. You know, whereas all those people could have gone to a project that's already funded or already doubly funded. That's the kind of energy that they want to generate about their site. That's where those are all the stories we keep hearing, right?
Yep.
So, I mean, and those are things that we all want to be that, but you have to be smart about it. You have to build that early. You have to know how you're going to get there.
Right, right. Let's dispel a myth here. You've backed 53, at the last time I looked at your profile, 53 different Kickstarter campaigns. That's a lot, right? That's 53. That should have really filled up your karma bank. And I think a myth, at least, again, only talking about the board game community, is that if you back a lot of other people's projects, well, that's all you need to do, right? Because they will in turn back your project. I scratch your back, you scratch my back, and that's a done deal.
So I think I'm going to disagree with you to a small point. I didn't really test that. As someone who has backed 53 projects, I look at how many projects a creator has backed before I decide to back a project. As someone who is, you know, moderately invested in the Kickstarter community, I really appreciate other people who are also invested in the Kickstarter community and aren't there to just sap money out of it. So as a backer, I look at that kind of thing and I go, hey, you know, it can be the make or break. If I'm on the fence and I see that they haven't backed anyone, I'm out. Yeah, they're just plain and simple. If they've only backed one or two things, or they've only backed things since they've launched, no, I'm out. Now, at the same time, I didn't push the people that I had backed in the past. I didn't send out any message to any of the campaigns that I backed saying, hey, here's my campaign. Why don't you, you know, scratch my back since I, you know, I threw money at yours back, you know, down the line or, you know.
Right.
So, you know, I didn't really test that. You are right in saying that it isn't just instant success. You know, you don't get to back 100 projects and just everyone immediately loves you. Like, that's not how the case is. People don't go looking for projects created by people with a certain number of backers or with a certain number of projects backed. That's just not a thing. But it is. I think it is in the minds of some people. Now, I am not indicative of everyone, but I think it is in the minds of some people who are looking at these projects. So it is important to be a part of the community, as with anything. If you want to say, hey, look, like, I'm doing such and such. Okay, well, tell us why we should care. Okay, well, here, I've backed so many projects. But at the same time, that's not going to be, you know, their reason for being behind you. The reason for being behind you at the end of the day has to be because you have a good project or because you've gotten a lot of good buzz already.
Right, right. I think you turned it a little bit, a point that I wasn't really looking at, and that is, why should I back someone who is not invested in the community, the Kickstarter community, the board game community, whatever community is that you're a part of? If a project creator comes out with a project and they've backed a dozen or more projects versus someone who's backed none, I will agree with you that I am more apt to go ahead and listen to the message of the person who has 12. And the person who has none, it's a little bit harder sell. I'm not saying I just totally ignore their campaign. Not at all. I will look at it, but I'm more apt to read further down the page of somebody who has more. To me, it just shows, I think it's exactly like what you said. It shows that they're a little bit more invested. They're a little bit more involved in the community. And I want to further that, right? I want to give back a little bit because I know that they've given back.
Right. Yeah. Now it is a double-edged sword because, you know, at one point, there's something more to having backed more projects, more than just being a part of the community. I think it's also important that you back projects so that you get a feel for them. so that you get a feel for good pacing and good reward tiers and good presentation and just kind of feeling out how the rest of the community likes certain things, because that's how you're going to make a project that appeals to them. Now, I had a good conversion rate. I didn't get a lot of traffic. So I think I had a project that was that people were more or less receptive to at the end of the day, even though it was a niche passion project. The other, edge of that sword is that, hey, I've been around so long that I am imagining a Kickstarter that no longer exists, right? As we talked about earlier.
I think those are all good points. If you had a decent conversion, as you said, then your project was probably, well received. From what I saw of the campaign, the concept, which is loosely Games of Thrones based, if I'm not mistaken. So it's got that appeal going for it. The cards, they were very well done and kind of reminiscent of some kind of, I can't say older art style, but just it looked very, like the painting style was very well done, I thought, and just fit overall with the theme. So I think your problem was not just a lack of reception or a lack of conversion or anything. It was just that initial traffic, as you said, the not enough work on the front end before the launch button was clicked.
Yeah, absolutely. And, that was one of those things I went into. I did a postmortem kind of retrospective post at the end of the campaign, kind of explaining a lot of my intentions behind what had happened and why I, kind of a little bit more detail to what you and I are going over here and some differences, obviously. But one of the things that I highlighted, one of the things that I think was the most major was I looked at how many video plays I had on the project. And, it was 570 something, I think. And that's just, that just wasn't enough. Because a Kickstarter campaign, it's the linchpin or the keystone for the whole project is the video. And, everyone realizes this, but at the same time, that's also the perfect metric. You look at how many times that video has been played, how many times it's been played to completion, and based on those numbers, how many backers you have, and you really get a good feel for, how people are receiving you, but you also get a good feel for how many people are arriving at the page. And so the fact that I only had, and now I'm not sure if they're unique views. I don't think they are. So I think that some of those numbers are a little, slid a little bit at the end of the campaign as we were rewatching the videos.
Right.
As I would go back and look over the page and see if I could, update anything. But at the same time, I needed 800 backers to get to my goal. And I didn't even have that many views. So I think, that is itself indicative of where I did not build enough traction early. I did not build enough traffic. I plateaued at day five. I made another $1,000 after day five, the whole campaign. If you look at my chart, it's kind of going up for the first 5 days and then it's just nothing.
Right.
So, it's one of those things that it really is important to build a lot of traffic and be marketing and have money to do those kinds of things or have presence in communities to do those kinds of things.
Right. We are running pretty close to time. In closing, give us a few things. If you were launching a new campaign or you would relaunch King's Favor campaign, give us a few things that you would do differently for the next one.
That's a tough one. Obviously, do put more marketing in there. I'd have money set aside ahead of time to make sure that I was getting, just kind of BGG ads, KickTrack ads, whatever. They might not pay back, but what people don't realize is at the end of the day is you need to get to that threshold. So even if you're not making your money directly off those things, every one of those things eventually adds to more momentum. So you're paying for it, but it means so much. And I found that just about every time someone shared my link, I got another backer. The kind of word of mouth, social proof, whatever, any kind of just visibility meant a ton. For me, I find it distasteful to, I'm not comfortable harassing friends and family to back my project. And that's a hindrance because that meant I didn't build a lot of momentum day one because I didn't get a lot of funding day one. I just kind of released it onto my personal Facebook page and then just let it sit and never really updated them after that, just hoping they'd come organically, hoping that they were interested enough to find it on their own. Now, the best projects aren't afraid to say, hey, this is who I am, this is what I'm doing, show me some love, And I think it's very, very of paramount importance to get people to share your project more than anything. The best thing my friends and family could do was to spread the word more than giving me money. And then, the money, awesome, as you said, gravy on top. And again, just get visibility, be part of the community, talk on these design groups on Facebook, have people you know in person, go to conventions, which is something I also didn't have the funds to do, which is you know, from what I've seen, a huge part of what makes this work. And, you know, be a presence on BGG. As much as that site has its ups and downs, it's not hard at the end of the day to be a member on a forum. You just give it an hour a day, or, you know, a couple hours a week even, and, you know, you can have something to show for it, which is something that I was shying away from because this was my first foray into board games.
All solid advice. Well, Patrick, it's been a pleasure speaking with you. I am sure our listeners got some valuable insight and some tips that they can put into their future campaigns. If you ever decide to do a Kickstarter in the future, hit me up. We'll have another discussion, and I wish you all the luck.
Thank you. Good talking with you.
All right. Thanks a lot. I've been your host, Richard Miles, for BoardGameAuthority.com. My guest today was Patrick Scott. You can find this podcast on iTunes. Subscribe, please. That would make me very happy. You can also connect via Twitter at BoardGameAuth, BoardGameAuth. We have a Facebook page. That's facebook.com/BoardGameAuthority. And as always, there's our website, www.BoardGameAuthority.com. Drop us a line. We would love to hear from you. Tell us who you'd like me to interview next. Or tell me that you should be the next guest. I would love to hear from you. Until next time, game on.